Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we welcome Bruce Kulig from Grand Funk Railroad and previously 12 years with Kiss. Bruce is in here in studio with us and has brought his signature guitar. He's also warmed up and will be showing us a thing or two on his guitar. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a wonderful show for you tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm just laughing.
I'm already jealous. I want that guitar.
I'm just laughing about my stuttering again, I swear. I did it purposely because, again, if I didn't do it, the timing wouldn't have been right. It wouldn't have ended correctly. So, you know, it's on purpose. But
hey, we're live. It's live. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right.
So I posted up the videos from the Birch Brothers we had a couple weeks ago, and which was cool because it included the GoPro footage on the $250,000 Les Paul. So yeah.
That's more than my house, I think.
Well, hopefully not, but yeah.
That's a lot of money for a guitar. It was a beautiful guitar, and the Strat he had was really nice.
Yeah, that Strat was cool. That was a really unusual color. But yeah, they were cool guys, and they did some cool songs, so it was really nice to have them in. And the videos turned out great, I thought, so.
Yeah, you can check it out on our Facebook page and then on the www.flowguitarenthusiasts.com.
Yeah. Or my YouTube channel, Selenium.
Yes.
What have you been up to, Jeff?
I've actually been doing a non-guitar thing. I've been doing dialogue editing. I know that's totally boring. It has nothing to do with this show. But but I've been also doing some other work on some other guitars. So a friend of mine just got a new Taylor, so I've been playing around with that. He let me borrow it, so it was
kind
of cool.
What kind of Taylor was it?
It's a 314.
Oh, yeah.
Electric. It's one of the new ones, and it was one of the NAMM show ones that they had at NAMM.
Oh,
he
cool.
got it, and he got a good deal because they couldn't sell it retail, so he got a discount. But it's one of the ones, and you know the ones at the show are always tweaked perfect. And it's a beautiful guitar, and it has the Expression 1 system, pickup system, the older system that now the 800 series used to have, but now they have a new one, the 2. So it's a really cool guitar. Neck's beautiful, consistent. They're great. They're just killer guitars. So I'm real happy.
Cool. Well, should we take a quick break and then bring on Bruce?
Yes, we'll bring him on, and we'll be with Bruce Kulig. Hold on a second.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here, one of the many guitar freaks at Sweetwater, proud to support the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show. Check out our cool 24 months no-interest financing. There are over 150 manufacturers that are offering this killer deal exclusively through Sweetwater. Just go to sweetwater.com and click on the easy financing link in the lower right-hand corner to apply. Or call us at 800-222-4700 to speak to a professional guitar enthusiast directly. This week, the Flow welcomes Bruce Kulig. He's Grand Funk's lead guitarist and also plays on tour for Michael Bolton, whom he's played with since the 70s, not to mention a 12-year stint with Kiss. His own projects include Black Jack and Union and the Bruce Kulig solo albums. So check Jeff and Scott as they hang with Bruce on this week's show. And don't forget about our 24 months no-interest financing at sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. Thanks for listening, and this is Kenny Burgle with Sweetwater saying, rock on with the Flow.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Richard Carter from the Winery Dogs, and you are listening to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast.
We're back, and I want to introduce, it's a, really a pleasure to have Bruce on the show. Bruce, thanks for coming on. It's just really great to have you here.
This is fun. Guitar geeks. We can have a party. Party, party. Okay.
No, it's interesting. He just mentioned a bunch of the, because you've done a lot of different sessions too, besides your gig with Grand Funk and with Kiss. And it's on your bio, it mentioned that you were on the Meatloaf Bat Out of Hell tour.
Yes. The part that confused me a little bit, and because I'm not wearing the headphones, I wasn't sure what the advert. And by the way, the Sweetwater people are wonderful. I told you that earlier. Great store to deal with. But I started out really just like kind of New York, busy with local bands, my high school bands, and always really learning and playing with good people. And then I wound up traveling to Europe backing disco artists, because now you're talking about the mid-70s and disco was big. But that introduced me to other people. And Michael Bolton was, for example, one of the first people who came from Connecticut. I grew up in New York, so anything in the tri-state area. And I wound up having a band with him right after the Meatloaf gig, actually. Okay, so I'll put it in order. But I knew Michael before, but then Meatloaf, my brother and I played lead guitars. So if you buy the newest version that's available in general for Bat Out of Hell, which is like one of those records that sold 40 million, okay, it really is. It's always in the top, especially over in the UK, you know. And that's Todd Rundgren and everything, playing all the guitar, who produced it. And I love Todd. I've worked with Todd a few times at these Fantasy Camp things, but he played some great stuff on that. But what they did is, you know, when CDs became popular, of course, the labels needed new ways to, like, you got to buy the same one 10 years later, you know, even though the CD came out in 87, let's say, you know, was when they started pumping everything, or all the catalogs. So there's two live tracks, and it's called Bat Out of Hell, a Bolero and Bat Out of Hell. That was the intro thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the left, my brother's on the right. It's really cool because it's live from, like, probably, I'm pretty sure it was Nassau Coliseum back in like 77, you know, believe it or not. And, I'm still friends with Meat. You know, it's kind of funny. That was all I did with him. My brother actually continued and worked with him. But then I went on, they mentioned something about Michael Bolton, because I did, work with him.
And in your bio, it mentioned Billy Squire.
Yeah. Now, Billy Squire, it's funny, that guy. Who's the guy with the big blog, Bob Lefkowitz, come on, I don't know how to spell it. You know this guy. He writes, he's everywhere. My brother sent me the link, and he did a whole retrospective on Billy Squire. It's probably pretty funny. But he had me mixed up with a few things. But I did play on the first solo Billy Squire record. It had some great songs on it.
Oh, that's cool.
Tale of the Tape was the name of the record, And ironically, and this is a good lesson for everybody out there, because you don't know really what lies ahead in life, you know. And sometimes when a door slams shut kind of hard, you don't think there's any light at the end of the tunnel, shall I say, and what's going to happen. But, Billy, I was in Blackjack with Michael. And then Billy asked me to do the session, okay, and I did the record. Then he asked me to go on tour. And actually, Blackjack, we just finished our second record, and we were supposed to go back on tour, even though the label president that signed us got fired, and we weren't really going to get any tour support money, but that's what we thought. So I was loyal to my band with Michael, you know. Billy got a different guitar player and went off, and of course he recorded Don't Say No and became a huge star, and I sat home on my butt. Okay, watching Billy become a superstar that I could have been his lead guitar player, and me with no gig. You know, I moved into a band called The Good Rats, which was a tri-state area band, but still just, local group. But to be honest, if I would have, at the time, if I actually did Billy, I probably wouldn't have had that opportunity to help when Paul Stanley was looking for someone to help out on Animal Eyes, which then turned into Don't Cut Your Hair, which then turned into 12 Years with Kiss. Because Mark St. John was the wrong angle. All you Kiss people know he was there very briefly, as Paul used to say, the Pope who died, because, he just didn't get a chance to really make his mark. But he got ill with a weird disease that kind of prevented him from touring, and that's how I got the opportunity. And then I had the home court advantage, if you know what I mean. I always felt like I really could fill those shoes well, because my roots were the right thing for Kiss, and that's why it lasted all those years, up until, of course, the reunion tour, and the makeup.
Well, you can't complain about that gig, for sure.
No. And while I was doing it, it's kind of funny you say that, because I'm always professional, and I always took my you know, career seriously, even though it's rock and roll. And some people always think like, oh, you know, there's no rules and you live this kind of fantasy life. Yeah, some of it is fantasy because people are, you know, want to meet you and, you know, the girls want to show you their breasts. You know, I mean, that's kind of weird. If you're a banker, you know, they don't usually do that, right? You know.
Might get a loan better.
Yeah, you might, you know. But, you know, the truth is all the time I did the best I could, you know, because that's the way I was brought up. My dad worked really hard and he worked for the government, quality control guy. And I think it was kind of instilled on me that I could do the best job. And I was always reasonable about it. I didn't have an ego attached to it. You know, if Gene heard something different, show me what you got. How do you want me to do it? What do you think? You know, I mean, and that made me very, very pliable and workable with them. And of course, you know, I was able to exert my talent and my opinions as time went on in the band. But now looking back and realizing that Kiss has gone on and it's got this 40-year history that they just got inducted in the Hall of Fame and I got to, you know, come along for the ride. And as much as I wasn't inducted, it still shines on me, you know. Mm-hmm. But the new generations of people, like watching Kiss, and then they go to YouTube and they see, you know, obviously they're curious about the non-makeup era too, even though they're in makeup with this like production that's can barely be matched. I mean, the stage that they have out there now is unbelievable. I know during my era we had some amazing stages too, but technology now, you can do like this unbelievable stuff with the screens and everything. But what I'm realizing is that every day that I was there, you know, it had an impact, and it's still impacting people now. And that kind of blows me away, you know, to think that someone would get into the Forever video and like, oh, look at the guitar you're playing. Oh, that solo is so great. And, you know, I did that in like 89, you know what I mean? It's a long time ago, and people still talk about things from Crazy Nights and Asylum. That's even older than that. So it's a really good feeling to recognize that a band such as Kiss and most of the classic rock groups and the heritage bands or however you want to look at them, it isn't about hope I die, and, you know, when I get, you know, to 30 the way Townsend wrote that, the Who are going out again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, people love this music. This is really great, great stuff, you know, and Kiss
music
is
great. Well, a
group
like Kiss transcends generations.
Exactly.
Just like, I mean, even McCartney, people... Mm-hmm. Kids now know McCartney. Oh yeah, he was in that old band, the Beatles.
Yeah.
But a lot of these classic rock groups, you'll see some of the guys are bringing their kids with them.
Yes.
So they're growing up with it. So it's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing you mentioned the Hall of Fame thing, I actually thought it was kind of really cool about how the guys, kind of did a small little protest for those of you that didn't get in, and I'm glad they stood up for you guys because you guys deserve to be in there as much as them.
I was really thrilled. I always knew like when it would. First of all, I was really surprised it happened because we knew that the people that the powers that be, you know, Rolling Stone and all that, always hated Kiss. It is very political. It just is, unfortunately, because you know, of course, they won the popular vote even over Nirvana, which is pretty impressive. But the truth is. I think the Hall wants to, you know, if Rush could get in and Heart could get in, obviously they're going to start allowing more and more, you know, some bands that may not be the critics' darlings, but just be bands that are really popular. That would be important, you know.
Yeah. Stevie Ray Vaughan is not in there, which is crazy to me.
Exactly. And eventually, let's hope that some of these iconic guitar players, like that one you mentioned. I mean, the list, I don't have the list here, but there's some gross.
But regardless areas, whether somebody likes it or not, whether they like Kiss music or not, the point is you've influenced a lot of bands, Kiss definitely influenced the way music evolved.
Absolutely.
Whether you like their music or not, that's a fact.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what the Hall of Fame's about. It was significant.
I mean, the Hall missed the point about I get that they wanted to, you know, like focus on the original four, because without the original four, you know, I wouldn't have had my opportunity for my era. But there are many fans out there that got turned on to Kiss during the non-makeup era. And I was their first, you know, the first Kiss guitarist. And that's not out of disrespect to Ace or anything. It's just, when did you jump in? When you got 40 years of history. And you know the bands that have had different members and they weren't the original guy, but, you know, it was important.
It's kind of like Van Halen, right?
Yes.
You're either a Sammy guy or Dave.
Exactly. But in the end, even though that they couldn't agree on much, and that's why they didn't perform, because, you know, they didn't want to recognize the era with Eric and I. I was well aware from my friendship with Howard Leese, who did get inducted because he was in the early part of Heart. But there were a couple of guys that were involved when they were really huge.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what I mean, the drummer Denny and all, and I realized, well, if they're not going to take care of those guys, you know, like I probably don't have much of a chance either. But Paul was Paul Stanley certainly was very he really waved the flag from my era. He knew the sales, you know, the impact. And then of course what the band does currently with Eric Singer and Tommy Thayer. All right, they put out two records, and we know the Hall is not going to be recognizing a band for the current, you know, couple of last records, you know. But still, the band carries on doing Kiss music, selling out concerts and arenas, and you know, they're just at the top of the world, and they didn't want to know about them. And they were, you know, there were all these crazy pot shots, you know. Well, they're imposters, and they're this and they're that. All right, well, what about me? I didn't wear any makeup, you know. Don't pick on Eric Carr. He was the Fox.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, so it I loved it all. Even though I stayed out, my management said, you just stay low and let everybody else battle, you know. And then when you want, you know, you'll be able to say stuff. You'll be there. And I tell you, I did a wonderful recap of the whole evening because to me, I was just like, that, you know, and I love the shot on HBO when Ace said something funny about forgetting his reading glasses and he has an acceptance speech, and of course he can't read it, you know. And I just like, I was laughing. I looked at Tommy and we were laughing, you know, you know, but along with him, you know, it wasn't Adam. It was just like, that's Ace, you know what I mean? That's funny. And then there was that shot of us with the HBO camera, which, you know, made me feel good. I mean, I felt completely included, of course, by Gene and Paul, you know, for them to fly me out there first class and put me up and have me at their table. I knew their dedication to me. And of course, you know, yeah, it wasn't a big battle with Ace and Peter. It wasn't, you know, yeah, they didn't perform, and it's not like they wanted to do interviews together afterwards, because they all have their different agendas, and that's their business. You know? My agenda is like, hey, I was a part of this ride, and this band's been around for 40 years, so I'm here to celebrate the fact that this great band that I'm associated with got a well-deserved award, which should have happened even sooner, but better late than never, I guess.
Absolutely. Now, I actually had a question from a friend of mine that is a huge Kiss fan, and he wanted to know what album and what song are you most proud of being part of with Kiss?
Well, you know, I get asked things like that, you know, and it's never like one. If I had to pick a favorite record, it would probably be Revenge, only because I know the band was very focused then.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not fair to, like, you know, Tears Are Falling on Asylum, you know, which was like, you know, people always talk about the solo and all, and how cool the song and the video was, and me taking a shower or something on the video, right there. you know, as you move ahead, you know, Crazy Nights had some great songs, you know, and that was really huge, that song, Crazy Nights in particular, especially in Europe, you know, it was like a bigger there than even here, you know. Mm-hmm. And those tours were big, and we did, you know, Monsters of Rock stuff. And then, you know, Hot in the Shade Hide Your Heart was popular, but Forever was a bigger hit even. Mm-hmm. And my acoustic solo in that, which showed another side of my playing, I really appreciated that there are people who get married, and if you're Kiss fans and you play Forever, which has to do with Michael Bolton too, because my closeness with Michael, obviously, and then getting involved with Kiss, you know, made it real easy for Michael to say to me, get me in touch with Paul. I'd love to write a power ballad with him, because that was popular in that era.
Mm-hmm.
And they sure did hit gold with that. And then when you get to Revenge and all, you know, you got Unholy and all the cool tracks, Domino and stuff like that off of Revenge. And some people love Carnival of Souls. I mean, I there's moments of my whole career, you know, that I think are really important for my kind of imprint on the Kiss stuff. But again, if it was one record, I love God Gave Rock and Roll as an anthem, and that was on Revenge.
Oh, wow.
And Revenge as a record. But there are just tracks from all those records that I'm very proud of.
Now, I mean, this is a gear show, so I got to ask. How has your gear changed? I mean, obviously, when you're with Kiss, you probably had all the support you need. You could probably bring anything you wanted. How has that changed from now, where, you know, even no matter how big you are, people are doing fly-in dates. They're just bringing as small as stuff they can. Can you talk about that and maybe lead into the guitar you have there and where you have it?
You know, all right, well, first of all, it's interesting. You made a good point about, you think with Kiss I can get whatever I want, which is true, but I actually had to keep it simple, okay, because we needed to perform and run around the stage a lot. So where before that I was always used to, like, some pedals on the ground, now it's like there's no way to find some spot that's going to – you get what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So that was a big adjustment because, all right, with Kiss all you need is really, you know, gain and then maybe more gain, you know, step on the pedals you got.
Yeah.
You know, so you can solo. And all I did with that really was just, I'd go to the center stage for the solo, my tech, obviously it's nice to have a tech, you know, he's like your support system. You know, he would just on the Marshall, you know, amp, just add a little more of the preamp, you know what I mean? So bring it back down. Equivalent to me stepping on the SD1, you know what I mean? Which is what I usually do. So I couldn't do that. I couldn't even do a wah-wah, okay? Because, again, I had to work the stage, and the stages were big.
Wow.
So what I did, here's my solution to that, which wasn't perfect, but it was good enough, was there was a company, it was Chandler that used to make this thing called a Tonex. And you put it in instead of the tone control, you pull it out. Now, if you actually moved it, you know, you'd get a wah thing. But I would just get it in that, as we call it, you cock it in a certain position.
Right.
It's not what you think. That word. I'm looking at my wife here. Not what you think. Cock it. Yeah. So you pull it out. You put it on a certain, you know, number. And then all of a sudden it's that, you know, it's that Michael Schenkel tone. Yeah. So there was my, you know, for Unholy, I could do that. Mm-hmm. And that was my solo for that. And then pop it back down. Very, very, you know, when you think about it, pretty primitive in some ways, you know, because, again, usually it would be like step on this, step on this, step on that. But really what KISS is about is really, you know, connecting with the audience, you know, performing, crunchy big chords, and then your solos, okay? So I actually didn't have to, you know, I didn't get sophisticated. Now, if you look at my current pedal board with KISS, or that I would have even used with Union, the band that I have with John Corabi, you know, I want a little delay because you're playing from a large place, you know, I could play an outdoor place and there'll be 10,000 people there with Grand Funk, and then we could play a casino that the rooms only holds 500, okay? So, you know, but either way, I want a delay pedal, so I'm a big fan of the DM2 from Boss, which I hear they're reissuing. The Kraft Waza, okay, Waza Kraft. I just read about this.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. They just released them. Yes. There's supposed to be an original version from the 70s in it, and then you flip it, and it's supposed to be like the engineer's special.
I just saw this. Mike
version.
Molenda and I were emailing back and forth from Guitar Player, because when I caught that, I was telling Lisa about it last night, my wife, and I was like, "Oh, this pedal," because I had to bring one home because I couldn't see the light anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Grand Funk does a lot of outdoor things, you know, and they were also reissuing the SD1. All right, which has been a staple for me for many years. I prefer the Japanese-made ones, but it's not like I'm not going to play one made in Taiwan, okay?
Yeah.
So those are always been, or some sort of analog delay and an overdrive will always be part of my pedals, okay? Wah-wahs, I usually love the Vox. I have a couple of old ones. Obviously, for the road, I don't bother with the old ones. I keep those for the studio. So any of the Dunlops that sound good, you know, or modified the Hendrix one. I like the lightness of the Hendrix one, but the pod isn't right. But I had someone modify it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a digital delay, too, just for the longer thing. There's a couple of songs with Grand Funk where I need even a bigger delay. So I'll just use one of the Boss ones. Sometimes a phaser, but usually just that delay, a chorus pedal. That's important. Hang on. I actually like this like kind of garbagey Washburn one, which is made by some Japanese company. I find another one called Qutec, Qutec, and it was the same one. It looked the same, except it didn't say Washburn on it, but it's the same pedal.
Yeah.
And whenever I find them, and you know, you can get them, you know, you'll find them for like $50, $60 used. You know, it's kind of weird. That pedal to me sounds right. I don't know why. It's probably not very sophisticated. Probably doesn't even have what are some of the fancy features in the, you know, straight through, you know, whatever they call that. Where
true bypass.
True bypass. That's what
we had Frank Marino on, and I was going through his album where he did Look Outside, where he does that like Hendrix solo.
Yes, yes.
And I'm like, what flanger did you use? Because I didn't use a flanger. I used this little cheap rotary speaker simulator.
Wow, right.
And I'm like, I've been trying for years. Trying every flanger. Couldn't get that.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy.
Well, look, I think it's wonderful. I mean, we can talk about gear, you know, until the sun comes up. We know that. But it's very fascinating that some of the old stuff that you find, if you happen to find it, it works, it works. And then companies are always trying to, like, you know, capture that magic and rebottle it and, you know, do it again. And sometimes they do. Like, I just found an MXR chorus pedal that I did compare it. You know, it's light blue, so they're trying to be like a CE1 or 2, which
two,
is the,
I think it's
the
CT.
Two, yeah, you know, the Japanese one that's very expensive on eBay, you know, because people love these and they don't really make it anymore, right? And I tell you, I remember doing this in the living room with Lisa listening. I'm like, listen to the wobble, and I tell you, the MXR was really damn close. There was a slight little different bump in it or something, but it wasn't like, you know. And I'm not Eric Johnson, you know, like talk about 9-volt batteries, okay? you know what I'm talking about, the Duracell, you know, come on. But hey, the thing's lightweight. It works. You could replace it, you know, done, you know, but that Boss one that you can't really get, it's not going on the road. You get right. what I'm saying? So that's the way I look at gear. I look at like what's usable. Live is a lot more forgiving, of course. Studio is where you take the, you know, and I'm into, you know, I have a couple of boutique pedals. I remember buying this one called the Waterfall. Some Greek guy made it. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I loaned it to a singer that I'm working with who I think he's terrific. And he was like, you know, I know he's not rich. So I'm like, just take it. Yeah, use it. Yeah, use it. Yeah. You know, what good is it in my basement? You know what I mean? So, it's fun. I mean, obviously gear and pedals and stuff. They're all colors for your sound, and then they're a cheap fix for that. Let's face it, a guitar can cost, you know, from $1,000 to $50,000, depending on what you're getting, a decent instrument, and then or a vintage instrument. But a pedal, you know, can be $50 to, you know, $250, and you can get some really great, amazing tones that inspire you, you know. So.
Yeah, and they actually say one of the reasons why the pedal market has just jumped up huge in the past 4 or 5 years is because the economy has been bad, and people can go buy a guitar, but for $250, they can totally change your sound,
rather than buying
a new Les Paul, or $100 or whatever.
Absolutely. And you know, amp-wise, that's a real easy one. When I got into KISS, I mean, when I first started out, the Marshalls were too loud. They weren't the master volume versions. I never really had any experience with the 800 series, even though I know they're good amps. And just recently I bought a Silver Jubilee because that's like the closest thing for me for an 800, you know. And I figured it's time to have one. But I used to like a Meatloaf. It was Boogies when they first came out. And they were amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, I had one of the really early ones, you know, and some guy on Facebook just wrote me that. I have your black one, which I know that, you know, like the old one, one of them got stolen. I had a replacement. And I was never, you know, all these companies upgrade, and I didn't even like it that much, to be honest. But by the time I got into KISS, they had a lot of modified Marshalls. So they were 70s Marshalls that were hot rotted because, again, just too loud, not enough gain, you know. And I didn't ask questions. I didn't go crazy or anything. But within a short enough amount of time, I had a good friend, Richie Fliegler, who at the time, he's written books on amps and things and worked for Fender. But at the time, he started working with Marshall and was very heavy into the 900 series. And I got one of the first ones. I still have one of those. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the SLX one and then the regular 900 dual reverb. But the SLX, that became a big part of my arsenal. And now, I mean, even though I know the 2000 series is more versatile, and I'm not that familiar really with the JVM to brag about them, although I could probably make one work. I know when I saw Satriani and did some jamming with him at the Fantasy Camp, I go like, why does that one sound so good? Well, you know, it's that's his model.
Yeah.
You know? And everything that isn't what I like about what Marshall put out as a regular JVM, you know, he did to what I would want. You know what I mean? You know, so
You never tried the Plexis?
No. I mean, I do have like a 50 watt that's not really. The Plexis were just too loud and too clean for me. And I always need a little more gain and not so much volume on stage. Backing up Meatloaf, there were 9 people on stage, background singers and stuff. Wow. You know what I'm saying? And then with Michael Bolton. I'm not even sure what I was using by then. It might have been the Boogie stuff, actually, which, you know, you can get a lot of gain and volume, of course. Always Marshall cabinets, though. I always wanted that. Sometimes with the Boogies, I used to use more like a combination of Celestion and Electro Voice or JBL because I needed a little more presence to come out where I didn't need that once the 900 series came along. And I tell you, I haven't looked back. I can – all the gigs I do with Grand Funk, it's always 900. Sometimes it's a 2000 head, which is fine. I own that, too. I'm in the catalog for the TSL, which I thought was a great head, too. A lot of people just thought it was too many buttons, but you can get a lot of sounds out of the TSL.
They're pretty versatile.
Yeah, very versatile. So, yeah, but amp-wise, I keep it simple. I don't go crazy. At home, and recording-wise, I've gotten into some boutique amps, like a car amp I bought recently.
Oh, those are nice.
I bought a top hat that I'm crazy about.
Top
right,
hats
but
are nice.
You can get some of these used, really, you know, and do a good deal, although my top hat cost a lot. But I couldn't. I fell in love with it as soon as I saw it. It was at the local guitar center here, and someone upgraded the speakers. Even though I called the guy who built it, and he was like, "I wouldn't recommend those speakers. Really, I think it should be this." And I make a better transformer now. All right, I know you can make me another amp, but this one sounds like this. You know what I mean? You know, like, all right, well, I'm glad you're happy, but I can make you something. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's really so subjective. Let's face it. And there's guys that will I mean, they can chew your ear off about just what speakers to use, and it gets a little crazy, you know.
What do you have any specific mics that you use when you record versus being in the recording in live.
I guess. No, I mean, I let the when it comes to the live gigs with Grand Funk, I know, you know, whatever those guys like to use, and I know it's going to sound good. Usually in the studio, it's either, you know, a regular 57, you mm-hmm. know, or I think there's some other, there's another brand that's pretty decent that my, the guy that I usually record with, Jeremy Rubolino, who produced my BK3, you got that one here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It might be like a Royer or something like that. I don't know. It's just a different kind of – and usually it's a blend of one or it just turns into the 57. I could probably make a whole record with the 57, but I do have other – I got some – I got another guy, Brian Virtue, who's just an amazing engineer, and I'll do – you know, I want to do like drums with him, you know what I mean, because he just knows where to put everything. But, you know, really, I don't think there's huge mystery in miking guitar amps and stuff like that. Yeah, there's creative things like what Jimmy Page did. And I've worked with some interesting engineers that I just know, like, wow, how did they capture that, like, immediate sound, but then there's this roominess to it that makes it really breathe, you know.
When you did, like, the Kiss albums, or if you've done stuff for Grand Funk, you didn't use the three mic setup? We have the close, the middle, and then...
There's been some of that, you know. With Grand Funk, we haven't actually recorded, but live, it's usually you got to get close, you know. But in the studio, yeah, there's times when they'll fool around, but usually I'm just looking for, you know, now you got all this software that can give you a little ambience, and you don't want to always commit to that. That Billy Squire record, if you listen to Tale of the Tape, it's really interesting. Because I was just listening to it on the flight back home from this recent Grand Funk weekend. And it's very cool. He always went for a certain room sound, but I know he was always headed towards that English thing. And they used to do that a lot. The Queen guitars are like that, too. You hear you hear the room, you know what I mean? But you have to really know what you're doing to place the guitar that way. And sometimes it's just safer to get – make sure you got that good direct tone, you know, that you want so you don't have to fool with it too much later, you know.
Yeah, well, when you're in the project studio, you're usually in your house and stuff.
You don't have
a 20-foot room with semi-reflection, you know. That's
and you know, when I record, I really am a bit of a stickler that I don't like doing anything in my home. I'll do a demo on my GarageBand app on my, you know, iPad. But I want to go into a guy's place with real Pro Tools, and I can crank up the real Marshall head that I'll bring.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because with bass, it's not as critical. You know, there's plenty of guys that they could do all the bass tracks at home, and they got a great simulator that's going to sound like an SVT, though there's nothing like an SVT, no doubt. But you get what I mean? It's the bass.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the guitar, I want to hear the you know, there is that air, even though
you can hear the movement of the air.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
And any session I do, I'm very, very clear with the artist that's hiring me. And I do a lot of different stuff with different people all around the world now because they just send me the file. And then I go to whatever studio is available that I like. And I actually, lots of times for those sessions, you just use a 4x10 cabinet. You know, it's Marshall, you know, it's got, you know, but it sounds great, especially with that Marshall head, you know, the MK2, whatever, you know, the XL, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's great, Marshall 900 series, and the tone is great. You know, I have an AC30 when I want to go Vox, and I have an Egnator head when I'm, you know, fooling around with different sounds. But I'm not like a basement head, a 66 Fender. That thing's cool. but I'm not like really crazy. Amps I usually hate because they're heavy and loud.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a little nuttier that I'd rather collect guitars and pedals because they're a little.
Have you tried any of the simulators, the software programs, or are you still an amp?
Yeah, I mean, when I do demos, I'm fine with using those. But I don't want to use that to give somebody a session. Here I am. I don't. You remember when Motley did an entire record all on software? You know, I something with Los Angeles was one of the songs. I forget the title of that album. You know, I think they did a fine job for that, but there's just something missing. You know, I know the other stuff sounded better because they were always put out huge.
Well, I guess, I know like Steve Hunter had used some of it on his new album, his Midnight Blue, and it was pretty impressive. I mean, it was hard to tell sometimes what was real and what wasn't. But I guess it depends on what type of sound you're going for.
Yes.
But you're pretty much balls to the walls.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this stuff, if someone's going to hire me, they're looking for usually that revengeous tone, you know what I mean? And that's a real amp. I mean, look, I did a session, the keyboard player in my band with Grand Funk, Tim, very talented guy, and he does some of this beach music because he lives down near Myrtle Beach in the Carolinas.
Mm-hmm.
And he sends me, he's popular with that. He does well. He gets on the radio there with it. So he sends me this track, which is like a cover of Kenny Loggins song that with Stevie Nicks. I forget the title of it. And I listened to it. And again, he comes from the Steely Dan kind of world, you know. And I'm going like, oh, this is a challenge. I'd love to do it. You know, the record had the original had a sax solo on it. But he really wanted me to do like a Larry Carlton thing. And I'm like struggling with it. And I'm going, all right, let me work on something. I'll do a little demo on my GarageBand, and I'll see what I can come up with. And I go like, look, dude, I really, you know, I think I know what I want to do, but I got to go in the studio. No, don't go through that expense. Please, don't. Just give me whatever you can from the GarageBand thing. And I'm like, oh, man. I was really bummed. But, for him, I would do that. For someone that is going to use my name and hire me, no, I'm going in the studio. You get that? And you know what? I got to admit, I was real clever. I used a Les Paul Junior that was chambered, actually, so that, because I tried my 335 and it wasn't doing it. And instead of GarageBand had an update not that long ago that I'm not familiar with some of the amps, but so that threw me. Okay, and then I pulled out this boutique pedal that some guy made me. It was called the British Blues, the Ball Breaker or something like. You know, I had like the guy's face who built it in, as one of those guards at the Buckingham Palace. You know what I mean?
Nice.
I forget his name. The guy was cool. He used to live here. I ran into him in the post office. I make pedals. Oh, make me some. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, and I plugged. I never even thought, could I use a pedal maybe with these software? And I did. So I found like some like kind of Fender, you know, deluxe kind of thing and used the pedal, put a little reverb on it. And all of a sudden I sounded like it had this Larry Carlton tone, middle pickup. You know what I mean? So I sent him, I said, what do you think of these? Oh, it's amazing. Don't go to a studio. This sounds amazing. It's great. It's great. It's great. Great. You know, so he used it just like that. So, when you're saying that you heard success from Steve Hunter, yeah, I'm not denying that you can. I'm not going to lie that there's a solo, probably two solos on BK3 where I spent a lot of money in real studios. That was the pod, because that was popular then, you know, the Line 16.
Yeah.
Because when we did the demo, when Jeremy and I did the demo, I just hit it. You know, I did the right solo with the right guitar. And then the fancy engineer, Brian, who knows how to mix, you know, really put it through a couple of things, warmed it up, made it more. And the solo is actually not a real amp.
Yeah.
Okay. Not my preference, but I wasn't going to try to recreate the session just for that.
Yeah, the magic was there.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And there was another really aggressive solo on the, there's a song called Something with Animal in it that this guy from Ed Guy and
Avantasia.
Yeah, I'm the Animal. Tobias Sammet, who's very huge in Europe and everything. Sweet guy, really great voice. And that solo was like in probably Jeremy's house, you know, again with a pod with a 59 reissue. But I just hit magic with the solo and I was like, I'm not doing that thing again. Fix it. You know what I mean? Make it sound better. You know, so there's a real, they're valuable tools. Okay. There is a use for them. But to me, it's always about, well, what are you creating? That's always really the most important thing. Some people get so hung up on the gear.
Yeah.
You know, will you sound like Slash if you buy a Les Paul with his pickups, you know, and Duncan, you know, that was great when Gibson went with a Duncan pickup, you know, I mean, wow, you know, but an artist like Slash can make that happen, you know, through his appetite for destruction or whatever, Marshall, guess what? You're not going to sound like Slash. If you're Slash, you'll sound like Slash. You're still going to sound like you, you know. I handed my ESP, the one we were talking about earlier a little bit, a Vintage Plus that I'm a big fan of, you know, humbucker single to Steve Lukather because he does a dueling guitar thing with me on that BK3, a track called Between the Lines. By the way, that's on iTunes now, okay, BK3, so just put my name in. You can listen on Pandora and hit the down button if you don't like the other people they play on my station because I don't like a lot of it. You know, I've been like listening to it, putting the thumbs down. I did it again this morning, you know. No, some of the stuff I'm – Michael Schenker, you want to play Rat? Sure, okay. Some band I never heard of, that sounds like – you know, no, I don't want that on my channel, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, but you can hear it on Spotify too. But anyway, Lukather did a great job. I told him I was tuned down a half step. He forgot. He brought his, you know, Music Man, you know, signature model, and it's an E, and it's a Floyd kind of thing. I want him to, like, really have some fun. And I did already tell him. I said, you can always play my guitar just in case. And he said, like, all right, let me play guitar. And he put it on the bass pickup, you know, which had that kind of, you know, that throaty sound, that a bass single coil, a little bit of a hot single coil. And he plays like Steve Lukather. That's my guitar, you know.
Yeah.
At times, you know. I'm playing a Les Paul on the other part, so there is a kind of a good communication kind of battle going on there on that song. But he still sounded like Steve Lukather. And then if I pick up the guitar, I sound like Bruce. You know what I mean? Because a lot of it's in your hands. It's all in your hands and your emotion and your talent and your you know, that innate ability, what kind of pick you use, the attack. I mean, that's what I love about guitar as opposed to, let's say, not that I pick on keyboard players, but I do. you're hitting notes, you know, all right, guys, you know, they learned how to do in some of the, you know, eras of when they were imitating the guitar players. Mm-hmm. You have guys like Jan Hama, who is, there he is, like, dueling with Jeff Beck, you know, because he knows how to do the naked move, you know what I mean? and you got brilliant people on instruments like that. But there's something about the guitar that is just so incredibly intimate with your fingers and your who you are, you know. And I can tell right away when someone just holds the guitar and hits a few chords, you know, kind of what level they're at, you know, and without judging or anything, just knowing what their, you know, strengths and weaknesses. And that's why whenever I hear a really good player, no matter who they are, I want to, can I learn something? You know what I mean? I'm watching them because, you know, what I do, but I don't know how. I just do it, you know, but I'm always really amazed. And the ones that are bad, some of them are only going to improve a certain amount, you know, and they can take lessons and learn. And I give lessons sometimes even on Skype when, you know, someone approaches me. I don't advertise it. I guess I just did. But anyway, you know, but I can help you. You know, I mean, I can help people, but it really, you know, I do feel a guy like Eddie Van Halen was just absolute innate ability. I'm sure he sounded pretty good the first chord he ever hit. You know what I mean? On the guitar.
There's those natural players.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
You can give them a slab of plywood,
right,
and they'll sound amazing.
Right.
Absolutely. So what do you call a hot girl on a keyboard player's arm?
Don't know.
A tattoo.
A tattoo. Ooh, the keyboard player doesn't get any love. That's true. Us guitar players, though, the drummers get a lot of action because they sweat all the time. You know? Something like that. Anyway, you know, well, look, there's always girls around bands, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
Now I'm going to have to think of like some hot chick that's with a keyboard player. I got to think of, I can't. Never mind.
Well, you know, probably the Bon Jovi keyboard player.
Oh, I'm sure he does pretty well. Yeah.
Well, anyways, so you've got this guitar here.
About a slab of wood, like you were saying.
Tell us about this guitar.
All right, this BK model that's available through rebel-guitars.com, or you can find it on rockandrollrelics.com, which is the manufacturer. Okay, he's a boutique company up in San Francisco, and I met them at the NAMM show 2 years ago when Wes, Wes owns Rebel Guitars. Wes does not build guitars; he's just a online dealer who deals specifically with boutique instruments and knows them very well. His site is, you know, the photos of the guitars are brilliant. And he introduced me to Billy because he was carrying some of Billy's guitars from Rock and Roll Relics. And I remember seeing them, and I was very impressed. He had something that was like a junior, relict junior. He had, you know, double cutaway models, one he calls the Thunder, probably something like the Sex Pistols guy or whatever, and then Johnny Thunders, right, whichever band he was from, right? I'm sorry. I'm not good with punk music. I'm sorry. But SGs, but all done in colors that, you know, Gibson never did, or relict in weird ways, different kind of pick guards, but just but always using really good mahogany and all the right materials, you know. And I was very impressed with it. And Wes and I discussed, I said, like, wow, I wonder if he would make me a copy of my Les Paul Jr. Because this Les Paul Jr. that I was thinking of was completely beat up in I don't know who had it before me, but they showed no love or mercy to this instrument. And I found it on Sunset Boulevard at Guitars R Us, which was a popular vintage store. I mean, I used to buy nice stuff from them. I mean, he sold expensive stuff. He was embarrassed that he had the guitar. He probably took it on a trade or something. Told me to take it home. It was beat to hell. It looked like someone took a hammer to the damn thing. The bridge was terrible. The pickup was barely hanging in there. And I could tell the headstock was probably broken, and the way it was painted. I don't know. I didn't know what was going on with it, but I had an extra badass bridge at home, swapped it out. I could do a little setups. I like that. I could tinker a little. I was able to secure the pickup, which turned out actually to be a patent number pickup, which is kind of cool. But they had to cut off the you know, the brackets, you know, because the Junior isn't like arch top like a Les Paul. And plugged it in, and I made it work. And he sold it to me for like $400. You know, it was the right weight, the right tone. Now I start bringing it out to you know, Revenge is going to tour Live 3. And all of a sudden, there it is. It's like for four songs, I'd swap off every couple of songs guitars, you know. Now, it's Eric Singer's favorite guitar of mine. You know what I mean? He just would go crazy. I love that Junior. You know. And then when we were writing for Carnival of Souls, you know, I would bring that guitar to the jam. We literally, and it was mostly Gene, Eric, and I just jamming at a studio that we could record it, you know, cheap studio. And it was always this Les Paul Jr. beat up thing, you know. I think it was from 57. And it got to the point where obviously I recorded with it on Carnival of Souls. And then even when I wasn't – remember, that record never came out until much later because they did the reunion tour. And then, of course, once that died down, they did Psycho Circus, which I was involved in a bit by playing some bass on things like the song Psycho Circus and stuff because I'm a good bass player too. Anyway, the guys – Gene loved that guitar so much he actually rented it from me to have – it was probably Tommy playing some guitars or Paul, whatever, to play it on some tracks, you know, which just shows you how mm-hmm. there's this real like interesting history with the guitar. I didn't do a whole lot with it post because it was one of my Kiss guitars, you know. Mm-hmm. It's in one of the tour books. You see me, you know, one of those rock poses with my hand up in the air and you see it. It actually probably didn't have the badass there. I probably actually just put a stop bridge.
You have to let us know if Gene buys one of the reeds.
Oh, right. Oh, interesting. He doesn't really like guitars. I got to admit.
Really?
Though, you know, in fact, this has one knob too many. You know, he likes just one knob, you know. Anyway, but... you know, and I'll send them a link to it, so he'll get a kick out of it. I'm not sure if anyone shared it with him, you know, talked about it. I know Eric's aware of it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this month's Guitar World magazine mm-hmm. Has a Dear Guitar Hero where fans got to ask me questions. And obviously the first question, because the angle of the article started off with the fact that the model is available and it's being sold only through the Rebel Guitars site. And there's only going to be 25 of them made, okay? So they showed me some love and did a nice article, and I mentioned, you know, the guitar. And you'll see the quote right in that magazine. It's the September issue with the Black Keys guy on the cover. I'm going to start hyping it tomorrow because tomorrow is technically the street date, the 22nd. But I know everyone has a subscription. You got it in the mail already, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So because I've had my friends, like, taking pictures of it, showing, have you seen this? Have you seen it? You know? Anyway, next thing I know, I'm going to be talking a lot about it now. And I got to admit, I'm real happy with it, what Billy came up with. Sorry, I had to have a swig of water there. I drink the hard stuff, you know. Kirkland, that's Costco, right? Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, you're talking about really, he did this one from photos. The production model ones are being done actually from my real one mm-hmm. because the relicking on it is really a challenge, you know, because again... I know the people listening right now are not going to physically see it, but they'll see links and or pictures.
Yeah, we have pictures that
right,
will be
right.
posted up.
It's beat up quite a bit, you know. Speed knobs, again, a solid
it's hard to believe that
mahogany
new.
body. I know. And the pickup is the good people at Duncan, realizing that actually the pickup that I really use, even though when I first got it had the patent number one, I replaced that right away with a JB, and this would be like 1991 probably, and those were the days when they literally the girl who does the custom shop now, she actually signed, you know, has her initials on it. So the closest thing that they make now is the Antiquity JB, which is very cool. And also, I didn't want a new looking pickup in it. I figured since the guitar is so kind of funky anyway. So this is an Antiquity JB model, and the pickguard is you know, the right vibe, like the old Junior. Now, what's even funny is you see how this was beat up,
mm-hmm.
and then. Of course, whoever owned it before me, the original one, was such a beast that there was no back plate. It just was like a piece like this that kind of covered it over, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but it had, you know, the original one had the bumblebee cap, and this is like a quality version of that. The neck is great because it's more like a late 50s, not a 58, more like a just a real friendly 59 neck. Rosewood fingerboard. The frets are... very close to the ones in that guitar, because that guitar was refretted. It wasn't the original frets. Because, you know, a 57 would have pretty thin, you know, not a big profile.
Mm-hmm.
So these are medium jumbo fret wire, which I think is great. And also, because, again, that one, I think the headstock was broken and all. No, Billy's not breaking the headstock and putting it back together for you. But can you imagine? But I know that one, it had showers, and I kept them. You know what I mean? The production model will have locking. Showers, which I think is a little improvement, which I'm happy about. You know, so it's really this again is a copy of what the Gibson was, pretty damn close. You know, the production model is a little different, of course, because, you know, we want to be careful with the copyright thing. So he's got a little different Les Paul shape.
Anything,
you know,
special with the volume and tone? And
no, just really. It's standard? Just full on. You know, it's one tone knob and one crunch. You know, and that's the beauty of a Junior anyway, and that kind of one pickup. You know, so you got... What's interesting is, like, you can clean it up, you know, and that's what I like. Like, the beginning of a Childhood's End on Carnival Soul was actually played on that Junior, you know, and then all of a sudden it's... you know, I go, you know, and the volume comes up. I don't really remember the song very well, but I'm just saying it started out with, like, there was no other guitar that Gene wanted to hear. It was that junior.
Yeah.
But turned down, to like barely the volume on, you know, like that, you know, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it gets that nice but, chimey sound.
Right. And this kind of pickup and these kind of pots will do that for you, you know. So you can clean up the sound, but, you know, look, don't play stratty Stevie Ray Vaughan things on this. It's not for that. It's really a crunch machine,
it's
you know.
It's a crunch, yeah.
And it was interesting when we were putting this all together to get this model out there. I was looking on YouTube at all the revenge shows. You know, there are people that post entire Alive 3. You know, when I say revenge shows, I mean in support of, you know, it was after we put out the Revenge album, which turned into the Alive 3, but it was a revenge tour, you know. And I'm watching and I'm like, okay, there I am. You know, Detroit. You know, I'm playing this guitar, you know, and I'd see it for like a Love Gun and stuff, you know. So I'm not sure if I was like, okay, I should only use it on these songs or those songs. I don't know. All I know is in the course of a night, I'd play it for like four tunes, you know, and it just showed how important it was for me.
Well, he was playing it a little bit before the show, and what impressed me a lot about it, first of all, you can get amazing harmonics, and the sustain is amazing.
Got a little cold in here, right? In a good way. You can get nice. Yeah, I'm real happy with the ping factor and the sustain. And I always love when a guitar, and it's very hard to describe. I always share this with Lisa sometimes. I'm like, listen, you know, the overtones when you're bending down and they beat against each other in weird ways, you know, when it's all working right, you know.
Yeah.
And that's always something that it isn't just the pickup and the amp. It's a combination of all the elements just like making this thing happen, which is like why a Brian May through those Vox amps is just so unique, you know, that tone and different things like that. Now, it helps that he's playing it, you know, of course, but like I mentioned before, but there is a certain, you know, combination of things that just make things right. And I'm just a firm believer. I know when we did the little postcards for NAMM last year, you know, it was like a slab of mahogany, you know what I mean? Because that's what it is. I mean, there's no binding, there's no fancy anything, you know what I mean?
Well, when you're playing up in that high area, you're getting that articulation.
Yes.
This a lot of guitars lose that. He's getting that little, it's hard to describe it, it's like a little chunk to it. Now, this amp is solid state, but when you're playing a blown out amp, it's the tube compressing.
You know, there's a great video, it's a little distorted, but you can still hear the sustain that you're talking about. I did a charity gig for MS that a publicist friend of mine invited me to. It had a lot of really cool people, actually. You know, I know I posted some stuff, it was probably back in like March, though, or something, whatever. But I brought this guitar to that event, you know, and I played with Kenny Aronoff and James Lomenzo and the guy from Marshall, what's his first name again? Bocott, you know, the guy who was from Grim, Nick Bocott, I'm sorry, from Grim Reaper. And we did a couple of Kiss songs, of course. We did Parasite. And that was great. And then I think we did, what was the other one? We did Deuce, you know, great. And then you'll see on the solo, someone captured me doing the whole. You know, I'm doing all that stuff and they're right on top of me. You know what I mean? So it's actually, I think that link or the video itself is up on that Rebel Guitar site, you know. And that's proof in the pudding. I know all the people who already ordered the, you know, because the first half are gone. You know, I'm looking to move the other half now, you know, now that I'm going to see the actual production model in the next couple of weeks, actually. So that's why the timing of our interview is great, and I'm excited to talk about it. But honestly, you know, it's only going to be these 25, and that's it. You know, that's, you know.
So you can check out rebel-guitars.com.
Right, and it's not D-A-S-H. Yes, it's dash, yeah.
And rockandrollrelics.com, because there's only a few of them, and they're going to go fast. And if you – this is a – as you can hear this guitar. It's an amazing guitar. Also, check out www.kulik.net. That's Bruce's site. And you'll be seeing updates and stuff about this guitar and in all of the stuff that he was just mentioning on the show.
And then, you know, on my Facebook, which is official Bruce Kulik, I'm going to have stuff up on that. And I tweet, you know, I try to stay in touch with everybody with the social media, which is great. And,
yeah.
In fact, the people that do my website and all are on holiday right now, and I'm like a little bit like, oh, I have to tweet it. Oh my God. So like right before when you guys started the show and the Sweetwater thing, I'm like running to my phone tweeting it, because I mean, I'm okay with it, but I have to admit, I have a great team. This, Chris and Beth White are just wonderful, but they're having a wonderful holiday in Norway right
now. That's good. Yes. But check out his site. His website's amazing. He's got pictures. Yep. He talks about the gear. And one of the things that I really thought was cool, he has a day-by-day blog of the making of BK3, and
Correct. It's
really cool because he tells you each day if somebody came in, he talks about the session, and also, too, check out this BK3, which is now on iTunes.
Yes. I only got it up there a while ago. I mean, it was when it was released, and then that label that distributed, eventually the rights came back to me. They went out of business. I let it lay low because I wanted to add a bonus track, which I did on this. There's actually on iTunes two bonus songs that you can get. So, and I'm real excited about that. In fact, you'll see in the booklet that should be in there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of guitar porn in the booklet. And you can always order that. It's from my website, and I offer it, you know, signed on there. It's not expensive. A lot of people are just like, yeah, I'll check it out on YouTube. I'm like, oh, that hurts. First of all, I mean, I don't know. You can't keep it with you. It's not,
I get some beautiful guitars.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
I mean, I get it that it's on demand, but you can't.
Here's the slab. You know, the slab's in there too.
Yeah, that's a close up of this. Correct.
Yeah, you can see the scratch between the two knobs. Yeah.
And that was, I didn't know back in 2009 or 10 when they were putting together the actually the artwork was put together in 2009 because it came out in 10 that I would, you know, have someone make me a limited signature, you know, model of it. But that guitar meant a lot to me. You know what I mean? And the photos, Niels Lozauer, such a great rock photographer, wound up doing quite a bit of my collection. And Vintage Guitar Magazine, since we're all, you know, gear geeks here, they put me on the cover. Instead of me, they put 9 of my guitars, which I didn't mind because it was a great article in the magazine, actually.
Yeah. You know?
And quite a few of them were the ones that, like, that he happened to shot.
Are nice. You know? And then on the front cover has his ESP,
right.
The Strat-type ESP.
And that's like what we were talking about earlier. It's not like the earliest ESPs that I've used. In fact, I'm hoping in the next year, since ESP is going to be celebrating 40 years of being a company, I was one of their earliest endorsers. They got popular in America like in the mid-80s. And by 86, I'm on the cover of their price guide. And that's when I went on the Asylum Tour, late 85. Mm-hmm. And there I was playing two M1s, which were like your basic kind of Strat shape with a Strat regular. I usually did the Rosewood fingerboard. And then one humbucker, you know what I mean? That was it. And a Floyd Rose. And that's the one that you know, there's some famous pictures of me like slamming on the floor and playing it like this and doing my big solo, you know. And one was like a multi-swirl and one was like a flip-flop blue, you know. And I know ESP's talking about doing like a throwback or something about, you know, just the connecting that the dots between their history and mine, you know. But later years, you know, you wanted more features on one of those. So then it became, I had one that was a 2-pickup model. Then they did what was called their Vintage Plus model. Now, I got my first Vintage Plus. I technically wasn't in KISS anymore. That was 96, 97. And that one had Strat single. Okay. And that's the one that I let Lukather play that I talked about earlier. It was a red
ash.
There's
a picture of that on the site of him playing it.
Yeah, definitely. And then the one on the cover of BK3 was, I asked them to make me another one, but I wanted a black relic body. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because they also offer things that are relics. So that's what that one is. And I've recorded with that guitar. The only thing different, you can't see it. I think the humbucker, that Duncan that we wound up going with, was more like a nickel, not a regular JB. It was like one of those Alnico 2 or something. And it had the nickel cap on it, you know. But it's the same thing. Rosewood, you know, Floyd Rose, Chrome Floyd Rose. And they're great. You know, they're like super strats. You know what I mean? I really do believe in them. And they don't actually offer that right now. They offer an import version, okay, but they don't do it from Japan, you know. But now they got involved, ESP, recently with the E2s, and there's some other models that they're promoting now, these Elites that are like that, but it's not exactly a strap body. It's a little different.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to do something in a couple months with them about one of the models because it does remind me so much of that, you know what I mean? So,
well, we've run out of time.
Yes. Ah, how yes. quickly it goes.
But yeah. real quick, everybody, if you haven't liked his Facebook page, go there. And if you have any questions, he answers. So if you have a question about yep. gear or sound, he responds, which is really, really, really
cool. I'm silly enough. At breakfast there, I'm like looking at the messages. And the intelligent ones I actually entertain. There are some that I give like a one. It's usually yeah. like a... thanks. Or yeah. it's like, huh? you know what yeah, I mean? But do
thank you. As you yeah. can see, the time yes, flew yes, by, and we definitely have to have you back.
Right. And we yeah. want to thank Sweetwater again.
Sweetwater.
And if you wouldn't mind jamming us out.
Yes. And thank you all. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah.